What I love about When Dating Hurts is when I pick up my 14-year-old daughter from school, I can put an episode on and sit there, and it explains the warning signs of what domestic violence is. Obviously, she's coming to an age where she's getting older, and this is the most invaluable advice that she can receive. And from someone that has experienced such a hard and traumatic loss, thank you, Bill. I really appreciate everything you do.
When Dating Hurts podcast continues to grow in popularity. The more who listen, the more who will know the realities of dating and domestic violence. In the meantime, the When Dating Hurts book, in paperback, ebook, and audiobook, is being purchased and read by concerned parents, teachers, victims and survivors, and of course, those who are currently dating. Education leads to empowerment. That way, if a potential abuser is targeting you or someone you care about, you will know how to detect it and how to break free and stay safe. Up next, another survivor story to illustrate how an innocent person can become manipulated and trapped in abusive relationships. This episode comes with trigger warnings due to its content and graphic descriptions. Beanie reached the point where she found ways to live with the frequent emotional and violent behavior doled out by her boyfriend. In his twisted mind, he felt he could do anything he wanted, and when she tried to stop him, he resorted to threatening her and the lives of her children. How does anyone remain in a relationship so toxic for 10 years? Listen to part two, the final part, in Beanie's story. After you've had one of those go-rounds with him, physical go-round, where you've been kneed in the stomach and partially strangulated and all those things, but immediately after and then for the next couple hours, what are you thinking? What's going through your mind? I mean, you got to be projecting, I just want peace, or I want out of here, or this is my life now. I mean, what are you thinking?
Honestly, all of those things. Part of what I thought often was, this is what I chose. I'm going to make this work.
That's what you signed up for.
Yes, this is what I signed up for. I'm going to make this work. I'm just going to continue to model the behavior that I want. And he's going to see how this works. Or I would just, okay, I just want to keep the peace. I just want us to, you know, he would go in the other room and he would give me space immediately after. And then the next morning, he would be very apologetic. At least at the beginning, he would be very apologetic. Mm. And then the next 2-3 weeks were bliss. They were him being the man that I always envisioned him to be. Him living up to the potential that I had placed on him. And, you know the cycle. That doesn't last.
Yes, I do know that cycle.
Yeah.
And it is confounding, even though so many times I've gone through it. I'll do it really quickly. But first part is storybook romance, which is what you're hoping for at that point. Second part is isolation. Third part are threats of violence. Could be yelling at you, throwing something near you, something, you know, something really gets your attention, like, whoa, this person's really mad. Better watch what I do. Next part is actual violence. That's number four, actual violence. Which could be, as you say, strangulation, could be punching, could be hitting you with something, could be kicking your dog across the room, could be smashing things in the kitchen, you know, real live, unmistakable violence. Next part is convincing apology. Look, I'm so sorry about what happened. I don't know what I was thinking. At least in the beginning, saying things like, this has never happened before. It'll never happen again. Something was triggered in my mind. I guess I was thinking back to when I was a kid. My mother used to scream at me and things, and I just lost it. I'm so sorry. Look, let's go out and get a nice meal. Let's do something. Let me buy you a new phone. I'm sorry that one got smashed. Now there's peace for a while, and you're thinking, whew, okay, now we're back to the person, or at least similar to the person who I really liked. There's peace in the land. I don't think there's going to be any battles for a while. Maybe we can just stay at this spot. And we've just done one loop right there.
Yep. Yep. Times that by, you know, hundreds and hundreds over a decade.
And it's always confounding for those on the outside who haven't gone through this as you hadn't for 30 some years. All along, everybody's looking at it like, why aren't you packing your bags and leaving? So let me ask you the perplexing question, and I know you'll be able to answer it because you did it. Why aren't you leaving?
For many reasons, I wasn't leaving. At the beginning, the reasons that I didn't leave, I believe were I was afraid to be alone. I didn't leave because I felt like I wanted to be loyal. I wanted to, quote, fix him. I felt like I was the strong woman that was going to be able to help this very troubled, disturbed man out of his, you know, mania. So at the beginning, those were the reasons why I think I stayed. The reasons I stayed changed as time went on. And I thought that I was financially dependent upon him. Up until I met him, I had never really supported myself. I had, you know, my ex-husband supported me and I was a stay-at-home mom. And so financially, there were so many things I had never done alone. And then the threats began to dictate whether I stayed or left.
So if you leave and then comment goes here, what are some of the threats you heard?
Yeah, that I'll kill you. I'm going to go after your children. He would threaten my children all the time. He threatened and destroyed my income multiple times.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah.
How did he do that? You mean you just get into your bank accounts and go crazy?
No, at one point I was a personal trainer and I had my own business and was doing very well. And this was probably, I don't know, 7 years in. I was doing well with my personal training business. I was renting space at a gym. Up until that point, we had always worked together in the same gym. He didn't like that I was working away from him because he couldn't control. Mm-hmm.
Couldn't watch you.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Couldn't keep an eye on you.
Yeah. Yes. And so he ended up threatening one of my coworkers that he was going to kill one of my coworkers.
He was threatening you that he would kill a coworker? Is that what you're saying?
It was, I think he got one of my coworkers' phone numbers and he called him and threatened him over the phone. So not to me.
Oh, he's going to kill this other guy.
Yeah, directly to the other guy.
And why did he? And why did he single him out? Did he think you had a relationship with him?
Yes, which I did not.
Oh.
Yeah, which I did not. So he was projecting all of his own infidelities on me because at that point he had multiple infidelities. So he threatened to kill that coworker. The owner of that gym said, hey, I'm sorry, you can't run your business out of this gym anymore. We can't have this guy be a part of the other trainers in this gym. And so I ended up talking the owner into allowing me to stay if I got a restraining order on him. And so I did. I ended up getting a restraining order. That's when things got really, really bad for me. The restraining order only escalated the situation for me. He would show up at my apartment complex at 4:30 in the morning wearing a ski mask.
Oh, no.
Yeah, driving the woman's car that he was living at her house, which I didn't know that at the time. But so he had another woman he was living with, driving her car in.
Had a mystery car.
Yeah. He would have a burner phone and he would call me saying, I like your jeans jacket that you have on right now, while I was in my house. He would drive up next to me on the road, just anywhere, and, you know, make a sign of like cutting my throat. He would, you know, try to get a hold. I had him blocked on everything, but, you know, he would create new accounts and, you know, try to get a hold of me on social media on multiple different accounts. And that went on for months and months with no consequence on his end. Like I had the police at my house every day and there was never any consequence. So ultimately, so the cycle goes, you know, I ended up taking him back.
Even after all that.
Oh, yeah. When they say that it takes 7 times, on average, it takes 7 times. I'm much higher than that. I tried to leave this man. I had multiple restraining orders on this man that I ended up taking off of him and getting back with him because it was easier to have him next to me than it was to have him lurking around in my bushes.
This is tough to listen to.
It was incredibly scary. Incredibly scary. The thought of him harming my children. He would message me and say, oh, your mom's home right now. Or, oh, I see your son's car is at work. He knew there got a point where he knew that physically harming me, that was not the worst thing he could do to me. And he knew that.
Yeah, that's right.
He knew that. And he would threaten the safety of my children all the time. So yeah, the reason I stayed, like I said, changed. It changed over time, but it was very fear-based for the last several years. When everything came to light and his infidelities came to light and the restraining orders and all of that, when all of that happened, the abuse escalated. And I believe that every time I took him back, he lost a little bit more respect for me.
I'm just trying to picture walking around in a house with somebody who has such a history of all the horrible, maniacal things that he had done. I mean,
horrible.
I just for a moment, while you were saying these things, I mean, this is like a new thought for me, but I was thinking, this is a person who was a love interest that, for all you know, you could have lived out the rest of your life with this person. You know, so the premise was good. And then I get to the point where I'm thinking, what if this was just some stranger who is sniffing around outside your house and looking through the window and getting burner phones and calling you up and saying, oh, interesting denim jacket you have on today. Now talking about your child or what kind of car your boy has or doing all those things, you'd go out of your mind. Okay. I mean, you'd be so angry. I don't know how you could sleep. And yet this is somebody that has done all this stuff who you know, and now he's back in the house with you.
Yeah, it's difficult to explain. Trust me, I wouldn't understand it had I not gone through it. But like I said, for me, it was easier to have him next to me. It was easier for me to know where he was and for him to not feel like he needed to stalk me. Because the stalking was just brutal. It was never ending. I look back and I was just looking back at photos and I had created a post on social media about the light in my eyes. And I look back at photos of me from 15 years ago and I just don't recognize that woman.
Kind of the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like just a shell of yourself. It looks like you, but there's no light in there.
No. My body was I had the physique of a, 20-year-old at, 45, 50, but my face just looked hollow and empty. I don't ever want to go back there. I don't ever want to go back there. No.
I mean, it's hard enough to listen to, let alone to know you experienced that so many times, uncountable times.
Yeah.
So Beanie, obviously this horrible dance that you have going on with this guy, which is indescribable. You're doing it. You are describing it. But I mean, it's just amazing. So many times I thought that would be it. And you'd find a safe way to bail out and move on with your life. And yet it kept happening and getting worse. Every time around the loop, it just gets a little hotter, a little crazier, a little more destructive, more emotional, just terrorizing. But at some point you did get away from him.
I did. I was about 8.5, 9 years in. The abuse was at an all-time high. He was coming and going as he pleased. He had another woman that he would live at her house for a little bit, and then he would demand to come back into mine. In fact, I had actually signed a lease by myself. I moved myself in the middle of the night in trying to break free from him, and he combed the neighborhood, found me the day that I moved in and said, if you don't let me into this house, if I'm not living in this house with you, I'm going to kill you and I'm going to kill your children. And so, of course, he was there. So anyway, Before that actually happened, I ended up getting diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh.
And I remember thinking, I didn't think that was how I was going to die. I thought for sure he was going to kill me. And I just didn't see myself dying from breast cancer. It was just, I was not going down like that.
It wasn't going to be natural causes, huh?
No. And I remember thinking, I 100% have to change my environment. And that if he doesn't kill me with his bare hands, ultimately, he was still killing me. I wholeheartedly believe that my body was fighting the wrong things for an entire decade, and that had I not been in that situation for as long as I had, that my body would have fought this off and it mm-hmm. never would have developed into cancer. So yeah, I thought, okay, this is it. Do or die. I have to make a move. And I was avoiding the idea of moving out of my city. I hated the idea of leaving San Diego. My children were there. I own a home there. My mom is there. I didn't see myself leaving San Diego. And I denied mm-hmm. that for a very long time. But ultimately, in the end, I knew that that was the only way that I was going to be able to break free of this man. And so I was sitting in my living room, isolated. At this point, I'm not talking to my family. I'm not talking to friends. I'm you know, locked in my house. He's pounding on my door. I was very, very isolated, depressed. And I was scrolling through social media and I found a woman who had escaped her own narcissist from across the country. And she bought a hobby farm in Florida. So she had, you know, just animals for fun, cows and chickens and goats. And I kept thinking to myself, maybe I could just live on a farm or a ranch and I can just work for rent so that I can keep my apartment in San Diego. And so I made a comment on one of her posts, not really thinking much of it. And we kind of went back and forth a couple of times. She ended up asking if we could get on a phone call. And we talked for about 45 minutes. I told her my story and what I felt like I needed. And she said, you know what? Why don't you just come visit? Just come visit me. And I thought, if you're crazy enough to offer that, you know what? I'm crazy enough to take you up on it. I had, at that point, my apartment was really the only thing that was holding me in San Diego. My family wasn't even talking to me at the time. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go. I bought the ticket the next day. And in the 3 weeks between the time I bought the ticket and the time I left, this man was in and out of my life multiple times. I went back and forth in my head thinking, I'm going to cancel. I'm not going to go. And I didn't tell anybody what I was doing or what my plan was. And I remember it was on a Wednesday. I don't remember exactly what he said or did, but it was something horrific, I'm sure. And I decided, you know what, no matter what happens between today, Wednesday, and the following Tuesday, no matter what happens, I am getting on that plane.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get $6,000 cash, give us each $3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com. or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Of course, he came back into my life for the weekend. On a Monday morning, you know, he was lacing his shoes up, getting ready to go to work, and said, you know, where does this leave us? And I said, this leaves us nowhere. And he walked out the door. And the next day I got on a plane and I had this stranger pick me up from the airport. I stayed at her house and lived on a farm for several weeks. After the week went by, I decided, oh my God, I can't go back. I'm not ready. I can't go back. And I had my car filled with everything I own from my apartment, all my clothes and personal belongings. And I had my car shipped to me and I never went back.
Even now.
I live in Florida. Yep.
That is something. That is really something.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my healing journey is a whole nother story in itself. And I feel so fortunate to be in the position that I was in and accepting that lifeline from a perfect stranger.
Yes.
It was life-saving. It was life-saving for me. I was able to, you know, she really didn't ask anything of me while I was there. I slept for days on end. I slept and I slept and I slept, and I was just surrounded by animals, dogs and donkeys and cows and chickens, and they really all healed my soul. And I was really, really fortunate that I was able to meet the people that I met. I ended up meeting a man who became my friend first, and he really played a very important role in my healing journey. I ended up falling in love with him. So I'm getting married and my life is, a full 180 degrees of what it was 3 years ago. My fiance is the most kind, gentle, giving, genuine man I've ever met in my entire life. And I would place my life on the fact that he would always have my best interest, always. And that was one thing that the abuser in my life never had. Yeah, it's kind of like a fairy tale ending for me.
It is. Yeah. But talk about earned it. You really earned it.
I did.
When you take off for Florida and then you're there and you are still there, but the communication now back to your children and things, does that pick up? Does that get healed somehow?
Yes.
It has to, right?
Yes, it does. It did. My oldest son, especially, he drew a hard line in the sand pretty early on that if this man was a part of my life, that he would not be.
Wow.
And that was his hard line. That was his boundary. And I accepted that. And honestly, it played a big part in me getting out because I knew that I had to repair that relationship with my children. I mean, it was my children. I had to.
So when your son said that to you, how old was he?
He's 20.
When he gave you that ultimatum.
He's 25 now.
Like
he
late
was
teens?
Probably 19, maybe 20.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe 20.
Right. Yeah, that's a tough day. But that's I can picture my own son saying something like that, thinking it through, and just saying, you know what, that's it. We will not exist in the same place. So yeah. You choose.
Yeah, he had seen me go back too many times. He had seen me break away and go back, break away and go back, so certainly a 20-something year old boy is, I wouldn't expect him to understand that, what the cycle of abuse looks like or what a trauma bond is, or, you know, certainly he's not wrapping his brain around any of that. And so, like I said, that was his hard line in the sand. And he wasn't the only one. I'll be honest. I lost my relationship with my sister and my brother, and my mother was kind of in and out of my life throughout that decade. She tried, but it was hard for her to watch. I don't fault any of them for cutting me out of their lives. I was not the person that they remembered.
How much of a glimpse into what was really going on, the real horror version of what was going on, how much did they know in real time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I hid everything from my family for 7 years.
I thought you'd say that.
For about 7 years, I didn't tell them anything. And then I did get them involved and they helped me to escape. And I did escape on their terms. Like, it was their idea. I ended up taking it back again. And so that was just devastating for all of us. That was devastating for me to betray my family after they had helped me was devastating.
Yes. That is something that is important, I think, to make a note about. And that is that, let's just say for a moment, we're talking about a college girl. And this college girl's dating some guy. And one way or another, her friends don't like this guy. They may not know everything, but they know enough to say, look, you have got to leave this guy. If you know anything about abuse, come on, wake up. That's what's going on. Or maybe she's even given them some of the play-by-play of what goes on in the relationship. So what happens is, the friends, very naturally, are hoping and maybe praying that she leaves this guy safely and carefully. But what happens is, somewhere in their minds, it's almost like they feel that they're only going to talk about it with her so many times. They're only going to get their expectations up so many times. And if they keep getting let down, at some point, it's like, you know what? We've done this so many times. I've talked with you. You told me that this past weekend you would break up and you didn't. And we've had this conversation. I mean, I'm running out of fingers to count on. So look, why don't we do this? Why don't you go work on it? Why don't you get back to me after you fix this thing? And they walk away. And it's understandable, but it's the wrong thing to do. You have to just, if you're really that person's friend or sister or whoever you are, family member, you got to hang in there. You can make your points. You can't basically say, I'm out of here until you fix this thing, because accidentally you've caused more isolation by your own act, which is the last thing you really want to do.
Yeah.
So you have to say, look, I'm always going to be here. You want to talk about it? I'll talk about it anytime you want to talk about it. You have my number. You want to see me for coffee? Great. You want to sit on a phone call and call the National Domestic Violence Hotline? Great. I'll always be there. I don't like what's going on. I've told you how I feel about it. You have to work this thing out. I will help you if you ask me to. That's really the way to do it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. And that's definitely what I would do, you know, moving forward. If I had a friend that I knew was going through that, I would definitely want her to know that I want to be her person and that I don't ever want her to feel isolated and alone, because I definitely felt isolated and alone. Some of the isolation was placed, some of it was on my own. Like, I didn't want to disappoint my family again. And so I didn't want to get them involved again after I had already disappointed them.
That makes total sense.
I definitely isolated myself in many ways. And that's why I think it's really important for people who are in the midst of it to keep a very open mind about who is going to be your lifeline. Your support system may not look like you thought it would look.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, my support system was all perfect strangers.
Yes, it was.
In a city, in a state that was 2,500 miles away. So I think it's really important to make sure you keep an open mind about how you're going to actually get out of this. And I felt like I was stuck for so many years. But ultimately, my circumstances didn't change from year one to year 10. You know, I made not that much more money 10 years later. I didn't have my housing situation was not that different. Things were not that different. And had I thought that I could have left on year one, I could have, and it would have been the same probably, you know?
You're right. The fact of the matter is, in terms of getting out of that relationship, it wouldn't be easy, but you were the only one who can really control when that timing comes.
Absolutely.
Now, it may not be pretty. I mean, it may be the last thing you do in your life. I mean, there's a lot of things that come with that. I'm not saying you decide and there's a suitcase and it's good. And now we're in Florida and you can go pet the donkey, you know,
and
live on the farm and everything's really nice. You can sleep in if you want to. So no, it's not easy. Getting back to the friend part of it, though, I think it's really important to say what happens. Let's take two college roommates again. Susie's telling Mary, you know, you know Bob, but you don't know the Bob that I know. And I feel like I need to talk about it. It's like, oh, what's going on with that? Well, you don't know all about the way he really treats me. And I feel like I need to tell you. And this confession kind of happens. Well, what happens is the person who's receiving this information oftentimes wants to pounce on this or wants to judge this situation. And I'm not saying I wouldn't do the same thing, except now I know it doesn't work or it's not a good thing. For instance, you might want to say, well, how could you be so stupid to be dating somebody who does this to you? That's not a good thing. Inadvertently, you almost become another abuser, because the last thing that person needs is to be banged in the head by you now. You have a good reason, but that doesn't help. It doesn't work. Or to give ultimatums from that side of it.
Yeah, trust me, the shame that I feel is so great already.
Yes, yes.
To have another friend, you know, quote, friend, shame me on top of what I already am shameful about,
sure,
is not helping the situation.
I'm sure you're doing a masterful job on yourself, better than anybody can, or worse for that matter. And then you have this other stuff going on. And so it's all understandable. If your son gives you an ultimatum, hey, look, mom, it's me or that guy, okay? I understand that. I'm not jumping on him. I probably at 19 would do the same thing, but it's not helpful. If you really look at what the desired result is, that's not the way to get there.
Agreed.
It's not. You have to leave the door open. You have to make it so if that person finally says, okay, I can't do this anymore. I bottomed out. This is it. Bottom line, now's the time. You want that person to know that he or she can come to you, whoever that is. You know, the person being abused could be man or woman, of course. But that's really amazing that you jumped 3,000 miles or so to blast off and yet never went back to California.
I mean, I go back periodically all the time now, just for visits and to, you know,
right,
to visit family and doctors and things like that. But yeah, my life is here in Florida now with my fiance and our dogs.
You're able to beat cancer?
I was, yes. I'm cancer free.
Oh, good.
Yep.
That's a wonderful thing.
I am cancer free. You know, I really quick, I feel like it's really worth mentioning too, before my process in leaving, you know, I started to go to therapy while I was in this abusive relationship. And I just feel like that was really the catalyst for me in trying to figure out what was going on in my life. I continued to tell myself, I am an intelligent, strong woman. What the hell am I doing? Why is this so difficult for me? And I just really feel like therapy, although it was slower than I would have liked, I think therapy really was the catalyst in getting me to make some of those concrete steps and moving forward and getting out. So, you know, therapy was the first. And then, you know, one of the second things was creating a plan, an exit plan for myself.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, creating that plan for myself, by myself. It was my idea. I coordinated it. It was all my moving parts. It was not, oh, my family saying, you need to go here and do this. And for me, taking the bull by the horns and creating that plan really helped me to carry it out, take a little bit more ownership in the plan and making sure that I carried it out. Third, if you can ever create physical distance from your abuser, or I don't like to say your abuser, I don't own them. He's not my abuser. He's just an abuser. If you can create physical distance, as much physical distance as possible, I think that your chances are much greater in staying away. And then once that physical distance is created, for me, no contact was everything. When I went no contact, and it really brought this huge sense of power back to me. Unfortunately, my story, you know, when I moved to Florida, that wasn't... That wasn't the end for me. My abuser found me in Florida.
I wondered about that, and I figured, nah, you haven't brought it up, so no way.
Yeah, he did come. Yeah, he came, and he had sent me many emails and messages, and he would, most of the emails were I'm sorry's and old photos of us, and I just wanted it to stop. I had always threatened that I would expose him. And especially the last several years, I had begun to document much of his abuse.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Through journaling, I would journal it or video record or audio record or screenshot messages. And
did you take pictures of bruises and things like this too?
Yeah, I did. Yep, I did. And he just was relentless. And so one day I just said, you know what? Enough is enough. I'm tired of being afraid of him, because at that point I was still afraid. I was afraid that when I came back to San Diego, that he would find me. And so I just got my camera and I just started talking and I pressed post and my story was out there. And he backed off a little bit. First, he threatened again, you better take that down.
Did you put it on like Facebook? Where'd you put it?
I put it on TikTok.
Okay.
I had a decent following on TikTok. You know, several thousand people were following me on TikTok at that time.
For all your workout kind of things, all your staying in shape and stuff.
Yeah. And so I initially put it on there and he initially said, you know, you better take that down, tried to threaten me. And then he backed off a little bit. But before he backed off, I thought, you know what? Go ahead. Keep coming. I have so much information in my phone. I'm going to keep going. And so I ended up exposing his face, his name, video of him abusing.
How'd you get that video? How'd you do that? You set it up in the room and then it happened?
Well, he was the one video in particular that is on all of my social media. If you look, you can see it. He was harassing me. I was in my apartment and he was knocking on the door and harassing. And I think this was like, it was in the middle of the night, like, I don't know, midnight, 1 o'clock, something like that. I could hear that he was messing with the window.
Oh.
And the front door was the only exit I had. There was no other exit to the apartment. And so I knew that my only saving grace would be to grab my phone and press record. I knew that if he knew he was being recorded, that he would stand back a little bit or
we wouldn't do what he might do.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he attacked me while I lay in bed and I have that on record.
If I were to locate that, would that be okay with you?
Of course. Of course. It's video on Instagram or TikTok.
Get out of my house. Get out of my house.
Where the fuck were you at? Where were you at?
And my video from last night will be posted.
Posted?
I will.
Go for it.
Yep.
Post it now.
I will.
No one's scared of that.
Bye-bye.
Or you. Bye-bye. Yeah, run, motherfucker. You're going to get it. You're going to get it to your kids first. That's what
I'm going to do. Bye-bye. Yep.
Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's a fight.
Yeah. I have so much in my phone, but like some of the screenshots are, you know, he would stand at my door and he would threaten to let him in and rape me. Otherwise he was going to hurt my son.
And then what did you do? You let him in?
Oh, I didn't let him in. I don't, honestly, there may have been a time that happened more than once. So there may have been a time I did let him in.
But did he rape you? Did he actually carry this through?
I have been raped multiple times by him.
That's just, I don't even know what to say, except I just feel so horrible about that for you.
Yeah, multiple times. He's a sick, sick, sick individual. Currently, he teaches women and children self-defense. He owns his own jiu-jitsu academy in San Diego. And after I exposed him, he left social media. You won't find him on social media. In fact, if you Google his name, you'll see my face, which is exactly what I wanted. If you Google his name, you will see videos of him abusing me. I didn't know how to rid myself of him. He was still in control of me, even 2,500 miles away. So he has gotten rid of all of his social media. And so he rebranded that. He got rid of his name on it and he changed the name. And his now supply, the same supply that he's had, you know, throughout our entire relationship. He lives with her and she helps him run the business. But yeah, he teaches jujitsu and he personal trains in his own studio. And he's living like nothing ever happened.
Of course.
And I'm sure doing it to her. You know, he's the woman that he's with now. I've had the gamut of emotions for her throughout the last many years. But she is in really, really deep with this guy. Not only does he live with her and her children, but she runs a business with him as well. So she's in a big hole.
Yes, she is. You're not the first person that has talked about how it's such a temptation at times to reach out to that other person, especially when the relationship's beginning, to say the obvious, which is, look, you know, you don't know this guy. I've been through the ringer with this guy. And this is the type of thing. And most of the time, those who have done that, who've made that call, who've had that meeting, are told to get lost. It's like, you know what? That's because I've heard about you. You're crazy. You've made up all this stuff. And that's not the guy I know. I mean, you just get it back. Now, eventually, yes, they're going to become the next target. They're going to be abused all over the place. And it's a big I told you so. But there's very little you can do to dissuade that person.
Yeah, that was really hard for me. At the beginning, that was really difficult. It was really important for me to get the word out to as many women as I can to protect them from him in particular. I just felt this, oh my God, I have to alert everybody in San Diego and let them know.
Right. I got to save everybody. He's on the loose, you know? So
yeah. Yeah.
Like a rabid dog or something running mm-hmm. around biting everybody. You know, mm-hmm. you're thinking, oh God.
Yeah.
You know.
My exciting days are over. I live a very drama-free life.
Good.
And I love it.
I bet you do.
I've had more drama in the last 10 years than...
You have. You've had a lifetime of drama all packed into a sardine can of one decade.
I feel very, very fortunate to be in the place that I'm in and to be at this point in the healing process where I started to wake up and feel like there's more to than just my own healing. I need to reach out and I need to start to educate and help other women who are in similar situations. And so I have developed my own coaching business and I'm a trauma-informed coach who helps other women who have been affected by trauma bonds and domestic and sexual abuse. So I'm really excited about this and it's exciting to wake up and have a purpose greater than myself.
And what happens too, what comes with that obviously is you have all the credibility in the world, you know, because you've been through this whole thing. You've been through it. You went through it many, many, many times. You came out on the other side. You are highly articulate, obviously. You tell it very clearly. You give people hope. So Beanie, you're at a whole different stage and have been for a while. And that is, you're not having to look internally. You're taking everything that's on the inside and you're bringing it out to help other people. If someone wants to contact you, can they go to a website? How can they reach you so they can get in touch with you, whether it's just to chat about some things or if they actually want to have you give them some coaching about domestic violence or life or whatever you want to do, really?
Yeah, probably the fastest and easiest way to get a hold of me is through Instagram. My handle is Breakthroughs with Beanie. And that's probably the fastest. You can just direct message me there. I do have a website. Also, it's breakthroughswithbeanie.com. I'm excited about being able to help other people get through this sticky point and move on. I'm living proof that healing happens. It's a lot of work and it's not easy, but it is possible. And, you know, I think that it's important for us all to believe that we are stronger than you think, you're more powerful than you can imagine, and you are not alone.
Beanie, I want to thank you and salute you for turning all your experiences into action. I didn't know the list of experiences you had, and I needed oxygen during some of that conversation. Your endurance is off the charts. But, you know, you could have stopped and stayed focused on your own self-healing, but decided to take it all and to look outwards and help other people. And your personal story is obviously getting better and better every day. I mean, you're really kind of like circling the wagons and taking all this and then, you know, really moving out with it in the big way. I think that's so great. But mostly want to thank you for sharing what you know with us today and doing it in such an eloquent way, in such a very generous way. I mean, I can see you, other people can't see you, but I see a very happy person on the screen in front of me. And so I know that's very genuine. And as you said, you saw pictures of you 15 years ago or so, and it was like, good news is you're in shape, and the bad news is what is wrong with you? I mean, you must have looked, like you said, kind of a hollow soul.
Yeah, I've had so many people say it too. I just had somebody this week say, you know, I look at pictures of you from that time and there's no light behind your eyes.
Right. That's a terrifying thing. But yeah. You are kind of a walking dead, you know, at that point. I was thinking of you, it's kind of like a hostage life in a way with that person. I mean, you're just totally under that person's control and their mercy. And this guy clearly didn't have much in the way of mercy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But you are a survivor and you will help other survivors happen just by hearing your words of wisdom and hearing about your experiences. So I thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate your platform and making sure that we get the word out to people like myself who didn't know better.
Absolutely. That's what we're doing. And you're helping. Thank you.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Beanie for her story. I hope you saw the warning signs throughout. Things like isolation from family members mean something when you know better. Beanie managed to survive her nightmarish entanglement with her ex-boyfriend. The secret to keeping away from intimate partner violence? Study the warning signs and act accordingly. Thank you for listening to the When Dating Hurts podcast. We have been steadily moving up in podcast review rankings based on downloads in the relationships category. That means more and more listeners are getting the kind of advice that can improve lives for victims, survivors, and their families. If you feel we need to hear your story, do not hesitate to email me at BillMitchell@WhenDatingHurts.com. That's BillMitchell@WhenDatingHurts.com. Hi, it's Bill Mitchell. I'm proud to say the When Dating Hurts podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. To learn more about Evergreen Podcasts or to check out other shows on the Evergreen Network, just visit evergreenpodcasts.com.